it allows you to introduce yourself, then the members will do the same too. Yes, oh, the minister has also, yeah. Okay. The minister has also submitted the apology that he has attended to another important urgent meeting. So we do have that apology. We appreciate that the deputy minister is leading the team today. Deputy minister, can you introduce your team?
Thank you very much, Honorable Khatmani, and also to honorable members of the committee. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's the first time that I come to the committee. So it's my pleasure and privilege to help the committee with its duties. And indeed, we want to table the minister's apology. He's on official duty as well, especially trying to help us prepare for the NHI pilot site. I think you'll find it quite exciting that he spends a minimum of 3 days in each of the pilot sites of NHI, and I think if members are available, we can share the program with members, because the meetings include also a meeting with the local leadership, so that South Africa indeed own up on making the NHI successful. I'll just ask Amos, the DG and the team. I'll just ask the DG and the team to introduce themselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you, honourable members. Good morning. I'm here with the team. We have the CFO, Mr. Van der Merwe. We have the DGG of Corporate Services, Ms. Tiny Rennie, and we have Ms. Melanie Volmaras, who is responsible for the data and information management, and also oversight for the audits that we are currently conducting in the provinces. And we have Mr. Siyabonga, who is responsible for the grants oversight, and he produces the report, he monitors performance. And then we have Advocate Ezra, who is in the office of the Deputy Minister. I don't know the other gentleman.
My name is Admama Suk, I'm from PMG.
Okay, members, can you start from Honorable Mashudi?
Okay, thanks, Honorable Chair. My name is Lydia Mashudi. I'm coming from the Free State Province. I'm the member of this committee. Thanks.
I'm Wendy McCarthy from the Northwest Province.
Sanbonan, my name is Mungsen Zulu Mdogakwana, KwaZulu-Natal, Kwanongo.
Good morning. My name is Sipho Black. I'm from the Northwest Province.
Good morning. My name is Michael Devalis. I'm from the Western Cape.
Good morning, honorable members.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Busiwe Mnobe, representing Gauteng at the NCOP.
Namudi Khasmani, chairperson of this committee.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Tulisile Ganyazatwala. I'm the content advisor. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Marcel Williams, and I'm the committee secretary for the committee.
Good morning. I'm Sean Whiting. I'm the researcher for this committee.
Okay, thank you very much for those introductions, members. Can I allow some apologies? Yes, member Rand.
Thanks, Chairperson. Oh, Honorable Boroto is coming. She's coming. She's just visited the clinic.
Okay, thanks very much. Deputy Minister, we are very excited to have you. Yes, there is an apology for Honorable Father. We have received it, a written apology. We have a very cordial relationship with this department, and we enjoy it. I'm sure the department enjoys being here in this committee. And I'm sure you'll also enjoy that kind of relationship that we have. And the minister is always around when we ask the department to come and make presentations. We really appreciate that, and we appreciate the fact that we are here today. And over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and members, honorable members. I think we were invited to present the annual performance plan within the context of the medium-term expenditure framework in terms of what are the deliverables for this financial year and the priorities over the next 3 years. I trust that members were able to also look at the presentation of the minister of the budget vote during the National Assembly, or at the National Assembly, where he outlined the key priority areas. We will be able to take members through each and every area and the details of the budget towards the end, but we also thought that we should also take members through particularly the implementation of a very key catalytic policy intervention, the National Health Insurance Plan, which is also accommodated in the budget itself, as and where there is an additional budget item called the NHI Fund, which is very exciting for us and for also on behalf of South Africans. I also would like to say that our focus remains on implementing and achieving the four strategic priorities. Firstly, the increase in the life expectancy of South Africa. And we are really encouraged that that SA data already show that there is a positive upward trend in that regard after many years of having a huge burden of mortality. We are starting to see life expectancy improving in South Africa. The second area is around reducing the burden of HIV/AIDS and TB. I have no doubt that members have been aware that our progress in this area has been unprecedented nationally and also internationally, because we took responsibility. We didn't point fingers at one another, but we said South Africans succeed when they come together and face a common challenge, and the challenge was HIV/AIDS. And 15 million South Africans came out over a period of about 18 months to test. We reduced the transmission of mother to child of HIV by half, and in this regard, KZN did us very proud. The reduction was far above around 70% or so. So, and it's also because they took responsibility that they have the heaviest burden. And they worked with us. They were not in denial. They accepted there's a problem, and they started working on it with all our support. In terms of TB, we're also starting to make inroads, especially with the introduction of the gene experts that reduced the diagnostic period from around 6 weeks to 2 hours, so people don't have to go back home and come the following 2 or 3 weeks to get the results of whether a confirmation of whether they are TB positive or not. They wait here, and by the time they go home, they have treatment. And they also know whether that bacillus infection they have is resistant to the sampling or not, so that they get more appropriate intervention early. The third area of focus is reducing maternal and child mortality and morbidity. I'm sorry, I also use the jargon because that's the language of health, but morbidity is burden of disease, and mortality is death. And in this area, yes, tackling HIV/AIDS has helped also in this area. But also, on the 4th of May, the minister launched the Karma Program, which is a program that has been agreed to by ministers of health in the African continent to reduce maternal morbidity in all our in all the member countries in the region. Even that, I think if we would come back later to give the details of Karma, that is also budgeted in this program. And the fourth area is to strengthen the effectiveness of the health system. So in the presentation, we'll also outline the various elements of strengthening the effectiveness of the health system. But indeed, at the previous year, we've also put a lot of building blocks towards that. I hope you are aware that we've established the National Research Committee, chaired by Professor Mayosi, to start identifying research or setting the research priorities for the country. And we want to align research with the priorities of the country so that we develop knowledge and expertise that help us to achieve our common goals. We also have had issues, a summit where we reached consensus on essential equipment list, the issues of medical technology, and a number of areas. We've released the HR strategy for the first time. We are now finalizing it as well. And we also have the infrastructure program. Details will be presented here as well. So, and there's a bill that I think it is on your desk in terms of quality. That is, we've also catered for in the budget, and a number of areas that the details of which will be presented. So, we come to you saying that over the past, being mid-term, almost mid-term government, we have worked hard, very hard, and I really want to appreciate the leadership of the minister. Mr. Muzwaledi, he's the man who falls asleep and leads by example, including in being fit and active. But he's always there in the field with all of us. And also the invaluable role that my predecessor, the late Dr. Sufularo, also played in laying a firm foundation to build on over the next, in this financial year, and over the next MTRA. Mm-hmm. I'll, with your agreement, Honorable Chair, ask the DG to present the details of the annual performance plan, what we hope to deliver specifically, and the details of the budget, how the budget is allocated accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister and Honourable Members and Chair. The health sector plan, as the Deputy Minister mentioned, the government adopted an outcome-based approach to service delivery, and the health sector in particular is responsible for achievement of outcome 2. that of having a long and healthy life for all South Africans. The identified outputs are those of increasing life expectancy, decreasing maternal and child mortality, combating HIV/AIDS, and decreasing burden of TB, as well as strengthening the health system's effectiveness. Can I mention at this stage that of all of these outputs, the thrust of what we will be doing in this financial year is on strengthening health systems, because we have seen that for the key outputs that deals with programs, particularly the burden of disease, there has been some strides that have been made, but because of the weak performance of the health system, it undermines all these efforts. I thought I need to mention that up front and to say what is it that will be the thrust, that will be the basis of the focus of our intervention. If we look at the negotiated service delivery agreement, for us to achieve increased life expectancy, of course we have to deal with the programs, reduce mortality rates and ratios, as well as reduce the burden of disease, whether it be for children, mothers, HIV/AIDS, TB, and so on, as well as reduce violence and injury, because it's also an area of concern. Violence against women, as well as the injuries that happen on our roads. But for us to achieve that, we need to strengthen the health system. And underneath that, we've identified the key health system's performance concerns that need to be addressed. The first one is primary healthcare-oriented service delivery. The second is on quality of services. The third is human resource for health. The fourth is the health infrastructure and health technology. The fourth is financial management, national health insurance, health information, as well as intersectoral action for social determinants of health. The last box is actually about the manner in which we work with other government departments to ensure that we can improve health outcomes. For instance, as an example, areas where we think there are still problems with access to clean water, and which contributes to, or sanitation, which contributes to diarrheal diseases. We have to have a formal program with other government departments. So we are putting that program in place, because we've already mapped out which are those areas where there are still problems with access to clean water and so on. So the vision is that of achieving a long and healthy lifestyle, with an aim to improve the health status of South Africans through preventing disease, promoting healthy lifestyles, and also improving the service delivery such that people can achieve and attain access, equity, efficiency, and also ensure that services that we render are of quality, and also whatever interventions we introduce can be sustained. So we had this specifically, but I thought I would talk to it later when we discuss NHI, mainly because when the minister launched the green paper, there were certain things that were outlined that needed to be done, and we wanted to just give an update so that you can understand how NHI will roll out. So we have these, and we'll distribute them towards the end. So with regards to the implementation of the health sector's response in terms of the MTEF timeframe, the preparation for NHI has begun, and this is what I said I will present later. And for this period, the plan is to have an NHI fund, but that will be preceded firstly by a development of a white paper. And Following that, then there will be a draft bill which will be then submitted to Parliament. So there are specific timelines that have been proposed. The idea is that as we develop the white paper, we also have to go back and reflect on the costing that was announced. Mm-hmm. And the pilots should actually inform us about this costing to say what is it that should be the appropriate cost. But for us to do that, we have to start first by reforming health financing in the public sector, because there are a lot of problems in the manner in which health is financed, particularly in the public sector. For the second one, the aim is to scale up the combination of prevention interventions to reduce new HIV infections. Much as we say that we've made progress with regard to testing, as of end of March, we had tested over 20 million South Africans. Now, the testing and counseling actually should also contribute towards changing behavior, whereby we can go back and say, you know, South Africans know their status, and on the basis of them knowing their status, they can then take preventative measures. We support counseling and testing with other measures, for instance, which I'll refer to. The first being the medical male circumcision as a preventative measure. But as we promote that, we also have to reinforce messages that people must still use condoms. We have to continue to test so that it's become a norm. People go and test, and not just for HIV/AIDS only, but also for non-communicable diseases. At any point in time, South Africans must know whether they have diabetes or not, whether they have hypertension or not, whether they're HIV positive or not, so that they can at least understand why prevention is key, and we can supplement that with a promotion messages and also programs. The next one is about combination of treatment interventions. For those people who know their status, we have to put them on treatment, and the target is to increase between 500,000 and 550,000. I need to mention at this stage that for South Africa to sustain treatment, particularly once we put people on treatment, we should sustain that. Now, we've seen over recent months that there's been a problem with the capacity of the local manufacturers. And largely because last year, in the past few years, the U.S. had donated significant amounts of antiretrovirals. So the companies produced and supplied about quantities of about 200,000, which has been minimal. As of 1st January, they had to up the production up to a million tablets. So what we've said, and I think consistent with the policy that the Minister of Trade and Industry has just passed, that South Africa is going to promote local production such that 70% of the supplies must come from South Africa. So that would be a basis on which capacity is built. So it means we'll have to increase our skill base and ensure that we have competent people to produce not only ARVs but other pharmaceuticals and other supplies. So meaning South Africa must build this capability to respond to the burden of disease. The number of PAC facilities that are implementing nutritional intervention. Remember, it's not just about treatment, it's also about ensuring that the immune system of those who are on treatment improves. So we've added here that the nutritional interventions, particularly for people living with HIV/AIDS and TB, must be increased, and we have planned for that specifically. And for infant, child, youth, morbidity and mortality, the key strategic interventions over this period, firstly, is to maintain the percentage of children who are fully immunized. There is a program that is underway. It's going to be launched end of this month. It's the school health program, where we will work with Department of Social Development, ensure that we pick up on those children who have not been immunized and ensure that they are fully immunized for different programs. Secondly, we'll also intervene in the primary schools as well as high schools, and I'll get to the details later. We want to increase the vitamin supplementation, particularly for children in the ages 12 to 59 months. Of course, it means that for early childhood development, we'll be able to target those groups, not children before that age. Those we will capture when we do the primary health care outreach programs, where we put together teams to go to households. For infant, child and youth morbidity and mortality, like I said, there'll be school health services. Now, for the school health services, the first is that we'd like to provide an integrated school health service. At least 80% of the services will be targeted at the quantile one schools. These are schools where that are carefully selected because they're where levels of poverty are fairly high. And we'll also, for grade one learners, it will be mainly targeting for quantile one, quintile one and two schools, targeting 680 learners in this financial year. And we hope that will increase the number to 800,000 in 2014-15. And then for grade eight in quintile one schools, we'll target 65,000 learners in this financial year, and we'll increase this to 156. Now, this is an area that is a bit difficult, particularly for high school learners. For high school learners, we know that there are problems of teenage pregnancy. We know that there are problems of alcohol and substance abuse. And we're in discussion with the Department of Basic Education, and we have to agree on whether we can introduce those interventions at schools. There are concerns at the moment, particularly regarding the governing school bodies and the policy of the school, that we can't, for instance, distribute condoms at school because we'll be promoting sexual activity amongst that age group. But the view is that the teenage pregnancy is a signal that something is wrong, so we have to intervene. But again, we sit with a problem because essentially if we don't, it means we'll only see these high school learners when they're already pregnant in our facilities. So our proposal is that we need to intervene particularly for the high school learners. Now, for the learners who are in grade one and so on, we would like to pick up on their hearing, whether there are any hearing disabilities, sight problems, and vision, and so on. We have a program already outlined, and the teams have been appointed. The launch will be end of this month, meaning from the 1st of June, we'll be going to the facilities. KZN has already bought 16 mobiles specifically for the program. We're hoping that we'll be getting mobiles delivered because we'll be using mobiles to go to different schools. For maternal mortality, as the Deputy Minister mentioned, we've just launched the CAMA program. It's a comprehensive accelerated program to reduce the maternal mortality. It is an African Union program, and all African Union member countries are supposed to implement strategies to reduce maternal mortality rates. So we have actually identified that our current maternal mortality ratios are sitting at 310 per 100,000 live births. And of the 310, half of those deaths occur in our facilities. So we have identified those things that need to be done in our facilities and those that need to be done in communities. From the report of the confidential inquiry into maternal deaths, the committee has actually identified that some of the deaths happen at home, others when women are on their way to our facilities. So the first of the interventions is that we'd like to get what we call obstetric ambulances, so that for those women who can't make it to facilities, at least they can still be able to deliver in an ambulance. The second intervention is that of having what we call maternity lodges. For the women who come from very far areas, we would like them to come early in the facility, even if they can stay in the lodges 5 days before. Then they can deliver safely, unlike when they don't even make it to the facility. So it will at least help reduce this problem of death in communities and when women are on their way to facilities and they don't even make it. So this is one area. The second area is what happens then at home. We would like the women to at least be encouraged to increase the antenatal visits to our facilities. So our antenatal coverage must be maintained at 100%. We can't afford women who are pregnant not attending antenatal clinics. So, but again, for 20 weeks, we'd like to increase it. It's quite low. It's about 37%. And we'd like to increase it to 65%. I think we can even do better than that if we put all our efforts into that. But increased proportion of deliveries that take place in the facilities, I've already explained that the obstetric ambulances and the maternity lodges would be one particular area. But it's not enough for women just to deliver. We also have to improve our postnatal care. Like I've said it before, honorable members, and I'll repeat it, that in the past, when deliveries were made, you'd see with a nurse, there's a baby, a nurse with a brown suitcase, that there's a baby in that house. So those practices are no longer there. Now with our PAC teams, the postnatal support that is needed will also be enhanced in that regard. So for reproductive, sexual and reproductive health, we'd like to increase cervical cancer screening from 52% and see whether we can even up it beyond 58%. One of the problems that we have at the moment is contraception. And there's a problem with the elite assistance because it is not moving the... It shows something that obstructs. Okay. My apologies. The cervical cancer screening coverage, we'd like to increase that. The second problem that we have, and part of the reason we have teenage pregnancies, is because our family planning services are not running as well as they should. And the manner in which we measure the performance of our system with regard to family planning is the increase in the couple year protection rate. As you can see, it's at 32%. And we would like to increase it. 37% is still a very low target. So we have to resolve the problem, and we're still in discussion with the Department of Basic Education about improving family planning, at least for in schools, but also generally. The second is that the contraceptive services have to be provided in almost all our facilities so that women have access to those services. The next point is about PMPCT coverage. We'd like 98% of all women to be tested. At the moment, some women come very late, they don't get tested, they deliver, and we still don't know that status. by the time they deliver. So we have to increase. And as we increase the number of women who are tested, it will help us also to ensure that we can achieve zero transmission rates from mother to child. Now, this is one preventative strategy that is powerful, in a sense that if we're able to test all women who are HIV positive, and if we're able, or if we're able to test all women who present, who are pregnant, and we're able to ensure that we can intervene, it means that we have an opportunity in this country to have no child born with HIV. And if we have no child born with HIV, it's a huge achievement. And we have already reduced our transmission rates from mother to child. So there is an opportunity to move that even beyond the 3.5 to zero. And I think we should be able to achieve that. So if we, but that is linked to us getting women who are pregnant to visit our antenatal clinic. So the two are related. And we have to aggressively do that. For the burden of disease of TB, our TB cure rate has to increase from 72%. We're sitting at 72% in 2010 and to 90% in the year 2014-15. The defaulter rates are at 7% at the moment. We'd like to reduce them further to 5%. To be honest, it would be good not to have defaulters at all when it comes to TB. In the first year, we won't be able to reach 7%. Once our primary health care outreach team are functional, we can move towards zero, because we'd be able to pick up which of the people have TB and then pick up the contacts in those families, like we used to do in the past. The burden of disease, in as far as the comorbidity between TB and HIV, it's still a problem, and we have to at least increase a percentage of those HIV-positive patients who also are suspects, meaning who might have TB, screen them so that we can put them on treatment and increase the percentage of those with TB significantly. Because remember, with TB, it's not a behavioral issue. TB is can affect anybody. It is also a social issue. So but it gets to be a serious problem when it exists with HIV. So the comorbidity is far more complex. So if we can tackle TB in this population that is HIV positive, it's going to help us reduce the burden of disease significantly. But we do have some prophylactic and preventative measures, like, for instance, the use of cotrimazole as well as isoniazide. So we just need to increase the numbers and ensure that people can be treated, at least those who are already who have already progressed. All of this will only succeed if our health system is performing. For instance, we go back again to primary health care to say, if you have community-based services through family health teams. There's been an analysis that was done when the World Health Organization was celebrating 30 years of primary health care. And in that analysis, about 30 countries implemented programs for primary health care. Of the 30, 14 made significant progress. And that report was published in the Lancet series. And the 14 succeeded because their primary health care was based on community mobilization. It was also linked to community interventions. And it is for that reason that our community-based service are going to involve also community mobilization. And we have so far trained 5,000 community health workers who are being deployed at the moment to start working as a team with nurses to tackle our communities. So at the moment, our utilization rate in our primary care services is still 3.2. It's a bit low, largely because our communities still go to hospitals to seek services. So we need to reduce that so that they use more services in our clinics and hospitals. The minister mentioned that we'll be appointing district specialist teams. And I'm happy to announce that they have been appointed. The team did the last set of interviews yesterday of nurses. We received a total of 2,500 applications. And of those, 500 of them were clinicians and 2,000 were nurses. Of course, there's a slight problem with that is that some of them actually come from the facilities, meaning they're already in the system. So in essence, it would be like moving them from certain services to others. So we're very careful in the manner in which we selected this team. The idea here is that we've got high mortality rates, maternal and infant, under 5, as well as neonatal and perinatal. So we're saying if we bring specialists closer to our communities and in districts, it should help us reduce the mortality rates. And this intervention has been informed by the report, the confidential inquiry into maternal mortality ratios, the infant mortality. So we've taken the recommendations of the committee. Remember, these reports have been produced over a number of years. Now we've taken those reports and we're implementing what is recommended. So for the specialist teams, we have a breakdown of how many specialists we've been able to recruit per province. They've been appointed. They are starting. Some are already starting in this month, in the month, in May. Others will start in June. We also, like I said, there are three streams of work to support the primary healthcare approach. The first is about the family health team. That will involve community health workers. The second is the specialist teams, and the third is the school health programs. Like I said, we are launching the school health programs end of this month. For community health workers, we've trained 5,000. We'll be employing them. We have a breakdown for each one of them, provinces, how many will be employed and how they'll be deployed. For the district system, we also would like to mention at this stage that we are revising our district health system policy, specifically because we've identified that we did what I call a district health expenditure review. Now, for the districts, the funds are not allocated directly to districts. And we've seen that there's a problem with management capacity. So we're investing in the district office so that there's sufficient capacity for implementation. And secondly, like I said, we also want to work with other government departments so that we have an intersectional framework within which we can respond adequately. I'm raising this because when we did the audit, our healthcare facility audit, we identified that the problem of access to water and access to electricity is not just a problem that our communities are facing, but in some of our facilities, there are such problems with regular access to water or regular access to electricity. So we've identified those facilities, and we will be working with other government departments to address those problems. So for the burden of disease, communicable and non-communicable, we have three provinces that are high burden malaria provinces, and that's KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. So for those provinces, we still have to reduce the incidence of malaria from 0.62 per 1,000 population to about 0.34. For non-communicable diseases, you are probably aware that there was a UN resolution and a declaration as well. There are high-risk factors that have been identified, and relative to those high-risk factors, we've identified interventions where we'll come up with a proposed legislation. It will obviously be presented before you. The first one is on alcohol advertising. The second is about salt content in food products. The trans fatty acid regulations have been published. They were published last year. There are other interventions like improving healthy lifestyles. The Deputy Minister on the 10th of May, that's a few days ago, had, I think, approximately between 800 and 1,000 people working in promoting healthy lifestyles. So it means it must be a movement, not just for the 10th, but for all of us, that instead of using lifts, we walk up the stairs. Instead of parking closer to the garage, we park a few kilometers away and we walk. We encourage movement as far as possible. But we also have to ensure that we can strengthen the quality of our environmental health services, consistent with the resolutions passed during COP17. For delivery of health infrastructure, I've already mentioned that we've changed the way we do this. The thrust of our strategy on infrastructure is going to be based on four legs. The first one is that of improving the maintenance of our facilities. We have backlog maintenance, and our view is that if we don't intervene, we're going to have to replace those facilities at huge cost. So we've got a list of maintenance backlog that has to be addressed. And then we also have another stream of work related to preventative routine maintenance, meaning for the new buildings and buildings that are okay, where there are no problems, we have to maintain them routinely. Then we have the third stream of work. This is for construction of the new teaching facilities, teaching hospitals, as well as medical schools. And the fourth is for the nursing colleges. So these are the four streams of work that are underway. We will be sharing the national infrastructure plan based on these four streams of work for each province, and we'll present these to yourselves soon. For the interventions, we have the PPP, if you recall. This is mainly in response to the production of our medical personnel, nurses, doctors, and others. But for the nurses, like I said, we have the nursing colleges infrastructure project, and this is mainly for the training of our physiotherapists, our medical doctors, and so on. For management of health technology, the health technology strategy was developed, so we have to start the process of implementation. Secondly, the essential equipment list for all levels of care. At the moment, the team that is busy with the audit improvement plan, the facility improvement plan, they will be using the list to ensure that every facility has adequate and appropriate technology, and also the standards that must be used to maintain the health technology. There is a proposal at the moment that we are investigating. If you recall, we used to have workshops where broken equipment could be fixed. But now those workshops are not functional anymore. We recruited engineers and exposed them to a training program in clinical engineering. There were 46 of them, but they've been deployed to hospitals mainly. So it will not be possible to have a clinical engineer per facility. So for some facilities, we may use mobile services where people go and fix equipment as it breaks. I think this is sort of still conceptualized. So for the workforce planning, we launched the HR strategy. We've been in discussion with our medical schools. They've increased their intake this year by 160 medical students. We are in negotiations, but in addition, the Deputy Minister has just come back from Cuba. She will probably brief you about the agreement for Cuba to increase the intake of medical schools. We, like I said, we've trained community health workers. What is different this time around is that we want them to officially have a formal certificate, so that it's not these training programs that are done ad hoc. So it must be formalized. Can I just mention something else? We have recently recruited about 470 unemployed graduates. The first group that we recruited was a group of about 70 graduates with BSc degrees and biochemistry. They are currently undergoing training at the University of Pretoria. They are going to work in our forensic laboratory services to deal with the forensic toxicology problems, blood alcohol, and so on. They will finish the training program. It's running for 7 months. After that, we are going to put them in our labs. There's also a new lab that has been prepared in KZN, and they'll be employed in that lab. The second group is a group that would like to deploy to provinces. It's only Western Cape that mentioned that they don't need this kind of support, but the other 8 provinces mentioned that they would welcome the support. These are graduates who have finance skills. They did degrees or diplomas in finance, others in HR and in IT. So we'll be sending them firstly to help provinces prepare for audits, to just get them to improve the audit outcome. We probably won't be there yet, but it will be a major improvement from the previous financial year. So they are currently undergoing training as well. Palama is training all of them with the government system. For quality, the Office of Health Standard Compliance, the bill is before Parliament at the moment, and public hearings have been held by the Portfolio Committee. We'll just hear when it will be coming to NCOP so that you can come in and brief you. We have audited, honorable members, we've got 4,200 facilities. We've verified that number. And we have audited 3,700 of those as of end of March. We have teams that are currently working to fix all those things that were identified in the audit. The team went to Sidibeng, to what used to be Motheo, but it's now Mangaung, to Zululand, Pixlikaseme, in case that in Limpopo, the team will be going to Vembe, and then Mpumalanga, the team is only going to start in June. So we've already visited 5 out of 9 provinces. Western Cape, like I said that they will not need support. They've got adequate resources. They will be able to fix the problems themselves. So out of the 8, we've already put teams in 5. So we'll be putting other teams in the other remaining 3. At an appropriate time, we'll come and present the results of the audit and the plan to fix some of the problems that we identified in our facilities. So, honorable members and deputy minister, if allow me, I'll ask then the CFO to present the budget.
Thank you, Chair. I'll take you through the allocations with an emphasis on the new allocations that will be allocated over the MTF, as well as the funding for earmarked allocations or priority areas that the DG has described. You will see from the first slide that the allocation in 11-12 was 25.7 billion. It grows to 27 billion for 12-13 and to 33 billion over the MTF. The biggest contributor to our budget, obviously, is our transfers payments, which includes all the transfers for conditional grants as well as NGOs. So we transfer most of our funds out to provinces. And then just as a summary, that the department expenditure has grown from about 16.4 billion in 8-9 to 25.9 billion in 11-12, with an average rate of about 16.5%. We expect the budget to grow to 33.9 billion by the end of 14-15, and this gives you an annual rate of growth of about 9.25%. You will also see from the numbers that our increase is basically largely driven by transfers to provinces for conditional grant, as I mentioned. We have also there's also a big increase in HIV and AIDS grant towards the end of the MTF period in the 14-15 year. And we've also introduced two new grants, the NHI grant as well as the nursing colleges grant. And as you know, we have discontinued the forensic pathology grant as at the end of last financial year. So essentially going to sit with seven conditional grants to manage. So as a summary for the budget includes new allocations of 97.6 million for 12-13, 618 million for 13-14, and 1.9 for the 14-15 financial year, mostly on those conditional grants. From these new allocations, Chair, you will see that we've allocated 10 million per annum at the forensic chemistry laboratories, mainly to sort out the equipment backlogs that might be there, as well as to address some of the staff backlogs. As DG mentioned, the appointment of some of the interns at the new facility in KZN, for instance. It was also the 20 million per annum to accommodate the new head office for the Department of Health that we pay over to the Department of Public Works. All the costs associated with the increases at the Medical Research Council has also been factored in. Significantly, the fourth bullet talks about the nursing colleges grant to help coordinate the planning of existing and maintenance of refurbishment of colleges. And those amounts of 100 million in the first period, growing to 200 million in the 14-15 financial year. Most of these funds were basically taken from the hospital infrastructure grant to create a specific grant for nursing colleges. The HIV and AIDS conditional grant grows with about 834 million over the MTF, but mainly in the last financial year. 128 million is allocated under the hospital revived program, specifically to cover the cost or the provision for the feasibility studies and implementation of the five large hospitals on the PPP projects. The NHI pilot, as DG mentioned, has also kicked in this financial year, and the first amount for 12-13 is 150 million, and this grows to 500 million in the outer financial year. The tertiary services grant is mainly increased to accommodate the effects of wage increases, and this grows to 216 million in the 14-15 financial year. Chair, to move on then to the funds earmarked for specific policy priorities linked to the strategic plan and the APP. The allocations for forensic chemistry laboratories is 67 million, growing to 73.2 million over the period. The Office of Standard Compliance has also been allocated a budget specifically to support its inspectorates and ombudsman functions, and that amount is 48.5 million to set up in the 12-13 and 42.5 million in the outer financial year. 135 million was allocated under the for condoms in the 12-13 year, and 148.4 million in the 13-14 year. And this is only funds within the National Department of Health budget allocation. The infrastructure management capacity building exercise, the project management support unit, and what we call the IUSS, is getting specific funds, 27 million for the current financial year, and 24.4 million for the outer year, basically to look after the support and planning, looking after the transaction advisors, the TAs, and also to plan for the five large or for the large private public partnership projects in business. Continuing on the health technology, as DG mentioned, the provincial upgrading of engineering workshops, the equipment audits, and to develop certain packages for health technology. 7 million in the first year, growing to 9.6 in the outer year. There's also money allocated to develop a hospital tariff schedule linked to case mixes for our provinces, especially the road accident fund. And this is 10 million allocated for the 12-13 year. For planning purposes of nursing colleges, 5 million was allocated per annum to coordinate the second phase of upgrading and the revitalization of the nursing colleges. So this is essentially a planning function or planning funds for planning. The DHIS, the District Health Information System, has been allocated 10 million per annum to improve data quality analysis and reporting. Further funds were allocated to the HST, the Health Systems Trust, growing from 8.3 to 10.8 million over the MTEF. The annual health statistics publication we've awarded to a supplier, and 2 million is being budgeted per year to publish the statistics. The CCOD is still an entity of the department. And to address backlogs and compensation and improve the systems, funds were allocated specifically for that purpose. The provincial support or the national support to provinces in terms of finances and capacity has also been allocated funds from 9 million in this current financial year to 11 million in the 14-15 financial year. And I think DG has mentioned that we... We're really giving a strong focus in improving the audit outcomes of provinces, and this fund is there to assist with that. To establish a SA Health Products Regulatory Authority and IT system, funds have been allocated for that over the MTF in all three financial years. Just briefly, Chair, on the infrastructure allocation, we've got three conditional grants for health infrastructure. We've got the hospital revive grant, the infrastructure grant, and we have the nursing colleges grant that has been added to the current financial year. The revive grant allocation is 4.1 billion, growing to 4.6 billion. This growth is actually much slower than in the past, and I think mainly because of the spending trends have been slow. Although the current financial year, we've actually increased our spending considerably if you compare to the 11-12 financial year. The 2011 year. The infrastructure grant allocation also shows some growth, although again smaller than in the past, and we'll basically focus this time on the maintenance of institutions and the smaller upgrading projects at hospitals. And as I said, the nursing colleges grant is a new one that has basically come from the hospital infrastructure grants, and those amounts grow from 100 million to 200 million over the MTF. Chair, just a quick, I won't take you through all of this, I'll just discuss the grants now. So essentially we've got seven grants. We've got three Schedule 4 grants and four Schedule 5 grants. And the total for them in the 12-13 year, total 25.6 billion, growing to 31.7 billion over the year. So you can see, Chair, from this that this is the major transfer function or the biggest part of the budget for the national department. Just to remind you that Schedule 4 grants are grants specifically allocated to provinces to supplement existing programs. In terms of the DORA, we cannot not transfer the funds out to them, but we do have a a clause which says we can withhold up to 5% from provinces until they put certain intervention in place. So these grants include the NTSG grant, the training grant, and the infrastructure grant. Schedule 5 grants are specific purposes grants, and in this case, the DG has got the authority that if these grants do not perform, that she can withhold funds from these provinces until compliance has been met and until certain actions has been put in place. The National Tertiary Services grants, I've given you the detail there per province. It grows on average over the 2 years, the average growth is 7% across the MCF. The Health Professionals Training Grant grows by about 5.75% on average over the MTF, with allocations per provinces as indicated. The infrastructure grant grows by 6.4% over the MTF, from 1.6 billion to 1.8 billion, with the allocations as indicated there per province. The rebate grant has got a smaller growth of 5.4% on average over the MTF, the biggest growth happening in Limpopo on average, as well as the Eastern Cape on average, and the lowest in Mpumalanga. The AIDS grant grows on average 18.07% over the two financial years, from 8.7 billion to 12.2 billion. And included there is a new allocation, as I said, of about 864 million to deal with the CD count expenses for testing. The insurance grants show significant growth of 88% on average, but it comes from a very low base of 150 million and then grows to 500 million to the 14-15 financial year. The nursing colleges grants, again, same thing. It starts at a very low base and grows to 200 million over the MTF, and essentially that comes down to a 41.6% average growth over the MTF for the two financial years. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, perhaps before I conclude, I'll ask that they also distribute these. And the reason I included this is that I thought the NHI pilot district would be a matter of interest to members. Yes, just to say that since the announcement, Mena, can you show this? Honourable members, this is not visible on the board as I distributed this. When the green paper was published, page 48 and 49 of the green paper gives an outline of what is it that will be done in the first phase. And if you go line by line, you'll realize that we said we're going to do certain things. Firstly, we said the white paper and legislative process. Of course, the green paper has been published, and the comments have been incorporated, and the next phase of preparing for a white paper will be beginning soon. The second was about management reforms and designation of the hospitals. Honourable members, you probably recall that we published regulations which have now been proclaimed about different levels of hospitals, from central, regional, tertiary, district and specialized, but also a policy on how those hospitals will be managed. So the policy has been published, but not only the policy, the adverts of the CEOs were sent out, and there were a total of 3,600 applicants, and the shortlisting is underway at the moment in preparation for interviews for hospital CEOs. For the reimbursement reform, we have started some work with MRC to look at how we're going to establish the reimbursement. But we also did an analysis of how much is owed to all the provinces by medical aid, RAF, and so on. You probably saw the news in Gauteng in particular of how much they're being owed. Road accident fund owes all provinces, not Gauteng alone, a total of about 700 million. And of this amount, about, I think Gauteng is only about 100 million. But the total is about, so I was just saying that that's why we need proper reimbursement system and revenue collection. The Office of Health Standard Compliance, Honourable Members, we have the bill before Parliament, but we trained, instead of 10 inspectors, we appointed 20 and trained all of them. They're now going to provinces to do what we call mock inspection, just to see how it will unfold while when the law comes into force. For the audit, we had targeted that we would have finished 3,900 by end of March. We finished 3,700, so we're close to that target. The district clinical specialists, we've appointed them, honorable members, and they've been deployed, like I said, starting from this month. For the primary health, municipality-based primary health care outreach team, we trained 5,000 instead of 4,500. And we've already allocated teams to the provinces. Now, because of the budgetary constraints, we're not going to be able to appoint the teams, the full complement of the team. So the decision at the moment is that for the 10 pilot districts, we'll have the full complement of the teams, but then for others, we'll have a critical mass that is needed for the work to be done. And equally for the school-based primary health care services, we've appointed 390 retired nurses. And these are the nurses that will be in the mobiles going to from school to school, but we'll also invite other audiologists to help with hearing, optometrists, and so on. For the public health hospital infrastructure, I've already outlined earlier what is it that we're doing. Human resource for health, as an example, I said we've increased the intake, we've published the strategy, and we're busy upgrading. But I wanted to highlight that the nursing task team that the minister appointed has finalized the strategy. It's ready. But not only that, we did a review of the OSD, particularly for nurses, because it was raising very serious concerns, particularly with regard to certain category of nurses that did not benefit from the OSD. Your midwives were not included in the OSD, as well as infection control nurses. And these are the nurses that we actually need for implementation of NHI. And then on the last page, honourable members, that we had said in this preparatory phase we'd also build capacity for NHI to create a capacity. Now, this is what the pilot is about, actually. It's about building and strengthening the performance of the district. So we have done a profile of every single district based on socioeconomic indicators, demographic profiles. We've also looked at the performance of the health system in each of the districts, as well as the service delivery outputs. And we took key indicators to see how we'll intervene. Because the idea is that for us to prepare for NHI, particularly in the pilot districts, because I think the argument has been but 150 million is not enough. We said, but the 150 million must be an investment for us to make sure that whatever allocations we have can be good investment. Meaning, you've got a huge allocation, but you use a small amount to make the huge allocation to perform. I think that's the principle. And this is where the thrust of the pilot is going to be. We've also tried to come up with what kind of service packages should be available. Now, from the preliminary study that we did, it's clear that our patients like being seen by doctors. It sometimes is the reason why they go to hospitals. If they go to a facility, there's a nurse they don't want. They just so as a result, we, as part of the NHI pilot districts, we are going to be coming up with a sessional program for primary healthcare clinics for doctors. And it is the part of the roadshow that the minister is busy with. He's seen the doctors, he's seen the health workers, the teachers, the principals, everybody that is going to be involved in the PAC outreach teams, in the school health programs and districts, a specialist team. So for the grant, yes, we've been given the grant, like I say, and we're busy with costing. CSIR has already started the project of population registration. They are going to be working with the Department of Home Affairs so that we don't duplicate efforts. You probably may have noticed that the Minister of Home Affairs announced that there's going to be a smart card. So what we'll do, we'll package information linked to facilities and link it to the smart card. So CSIR has already started that work. And finally, we have, under the leadership of the Deputy Minister, the e-health strategy. It is now going for print. You are aware that we spent quite a lot of money trying to come up with the IT systems in the public sector, particularly health sector, but we still don't have comprehensive information. So the e-health strategy presents that opportunity to fix these problems that we had in the past. Yes, and the accreditation of health providers. So I was just saying that this is what is happening now, and some of the things we've already achieved as building blocks for NHI. Thank you very much.
Yes, I think that's just the presentation. In summary, we would like the portfolio committee to also join us. I know a lot of members do constituent work to help mobilize the South Africans, firstly to reduce the burden of disease. It's not sustainable for any country to have a quadruple burden of disease as we have. But secondly, that from our part, we will make those efforts that we have outlined here to be successful. And we have put in place measures to ensure that South Africans detect diseases early, as the DG said, HIV/AIDS. And only 10% of people with chronic diseases are able to know that they have those risk factors early. And if they know they have early, we can intervene early. So we would also put measures in place so that people can test and know their status. With the regulations on salt content in food, we appreciate that it's not only what you can do at home, including exercise and all that. It's also what what is available in the marketplace that contributes to the disease burden. And the regulation of salt will help. Just to set some statistics that we have indicate that if we can just reduce salt content in bread alone, we can save more than 6,000 lives annually. So there is evidence that if we do what we need to do, it would work. I think by the end of this month, that we'll have integrated plans, which includes provincial plans. Because we need to ensure alignment of the national plan with the provincial plan and the district plan as well.
So we will be finalizing that as part of the implementation platform, and with the aim of improving the health status of South Africans, over and above being effective as a health system. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot to the minister, to the team. Just before I allow members to make comments and ask questions, I just want to say that, you know, it's always a pleasure and exciting to listen to the health department's presentation. You always have new innovations, new interventions on challenges we always observe as committee members and also as members of parliament in our areas. And that means that we have a strong element of research and innovation in the department to find lasting solutions for the problems of health issues. And also, we have also been very hard in departments to provide us with information that is able to tell us what is happening in the province. I think you have tried to give us such breakdowns in your presentation up until to the level of the district. So we also appreciate that, and also the distribution of the NHI pilot sites that are also indicating where are they taking place in the provinces. I think you'll keep up that standard very high. And another thing is that I would like to hear more about the plans and budgeting for the emergency medical services. I didn't pick it up on the presentation. If you can please tell us what are your plans in that regard, because it's very important. I know that some of the equipment is aging as far as this area is concerned, and also the equipping of the office, of the areas where they operate from this official. And lastly, I would like to get if there's any progress or target for the distribution of the male and female condoms. Yeah, how much do we intend distributing this, particularly the female condoms? Members, can I see hands? Member Mnuge, followed by Member Ranto, Member De Villiers, Member Blakey, followed by Member. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson. I will also join you in terms of appreciating this openness. You can see in the interviews that are held on this stage and whatever. You have already, as you come and then we say, well, please, we are asking you to break it down into provinces, you have just done that. So I also want to say we highly appreciate it. On the infrastructure revitalization, also I want to comment that when you pass Baragwanath, there is life outside. You have brought dignity to people and dignity to the hospital. It says, come to me. I said, Aish, Baragwanath. You see, if all can do that and say the money must get to the value, must see the value of this grant. Also, you talked about the school health program and the problem with maybe other schools' policies. I think the strategy of the NHI will also just bring in at the one stakeholder, the school government, school associations. There's FETSAS for whites and there's NSGB. So even if you can't reach all the SGBs through these organizations, we can then be getting a buy-in from the SGBs. On your breakdown of the your grants or your budget, I see Gauteng 7 to 8, and the rest are lower. Is it because of the need, or it's I see Western Cape and Gauteng, and maybe if it is equitable share, KZN and Gauteng. So which criteria do you use? Is it because of the need that these provinces need this, or what criteria? Lastly, it is the you have learned lessons from Free State. Remember, 5 months before, the drugs were not there in the hospitals or clinics. And Limpopo now is on Section 100B, and we have Gauteng also with some assistance from the SNAP. What are the mechanisms that you are putting in place to take so that next day it shouldn't be another province? Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I must also appreciate the work that the department is doing. You know you are as if you are working in another world, but not working in South Africa. It's as if, or you are coming from somewhere else, not here in South Africa. I appreciate really the work that the Department of Health is doing. I don't have questions as such, ma'am. As much as I've got maybe comments. You have mentioned the summit, Deputy Minister, that was held in somewhere in Gauteng on the 11th up to the 12th, no, or the 13th of April. I just wanted to say that the same date, there was a summit on education in Pretoria, which we attended as whips of the Committee of Education, the Portfolio Committee of Education, and Select Committee in the NCOP. I would also appreciate if there is any summit that is all coming to also, if the department can invite the whips of the committee or some members of the committee to attend those summits, because the one that I attended in Pretoria, it was very much helpful, and it's going to be cascaded down to the regions and the provinces. And also, I am coming, I'm fresh from the conference of my region. The youth there, they raise an issue of death rate that we have in, we were focusing in our region. And they were saying they need a Department of Health to also educate. As much as you educate the people on HIV and AIDS, and also to stop even the married people, they are not forced to have 5 children in one family. So the youth raised that it's not possible. They say they're not actually decreasing the number of people in South Africa, but at least because of the birth rate that is happening within the schools and within other, especially those communities, they need attention, the rural communities of our province. They wanted the education on that. I'm not sure if the department has heard in the media sometime last week and the week before last of the practitioners and the doctors in our province that were not paid. As a result, some of them are disgruntled. They're not working. They are not productive in their work anymore. So I just wanted to know what is the department, what is your role on the issue of those, especially all of them. In fact, they are very important. The doctors are important. The home-based workers are also important, as much as the nurses are also important people. I also wanted to highlight the fact that last year we were in the program of the Provincial Week, when we went to the hospitals that we visited, in Midland Hospital in Swaffrenet, Kalkato region, and Foslo, Andres Foslo Hospital in Somerset East, the improvement in the hospital is very much good. The two hospitals have improved. As a result, I think in Livingston, in Port Elizabeth, it has no more a big burden of people coming from those rural towns around Kalkato because of the two hospitals that are doing very well. I just wanted us as government or I don't know what can we do to take the examples of those hospitals to our rural hospitals. Yeah, it's a rural area, Graaff-Reinet and Somerset East, but we've got those deep rural areas like the ex-Transkei and the ex-Transkei, especially towards the attitude of nurses and the attitude of doctors. I was confronted by one woman who said one of the doctors in their hospital, these young girls and young boys or young gentlemen, when he is examining a patient, he's having a cell phone in his, or we are mixer or whatever, Facebook, he's on Facebook, or she's, we are Twitter, whatever, but at the same time, he's examining a patient, because she does, akafuni ukuba late, in she does not want to miss the opportunity with Facebook. So I'm not sure, Deputy Minister, what are we not doing or what we should do so as to combat the type of action that we see or the type of attitude that we see in the clinical clinical engineers, teaching. I just want to know, have you deployed them according to provinces? How many in each province? Thanks, Chairperson. I don't think. I don't think there is any question.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I also must commend that the strategies and the ideas and the plans in the document of the department is excellent and very good. Now, we get some information that certain hospitals it's not performing due to the plans and the aims of the department. And so they are actually embarrassing the department on their plans. Now, what is the situation in the department to make sure that that not happens and go out in the media so that you must stand with your red face in front of the people or the community? That one is very important because you must make sure of that. Then the information, Honorable Chairperson, is on the male circumcisions and the HCT uptake rate. I'm very much interested in the information of provinces. What is the information of provinces? That is in connection with page 7 and also the other page, page 8 and page 9, the interventions during 2012-2013 and 2014-15. Then the other question, what is the obstacles? What is the obstacles for the department to increase the vitamin supplementation coverage among children 12 to 59 months from 40% to 55%? I am very much interested that we must aim for a higher. Maybe there are some obstacles which we don't know about. You must just tell us what is the situation in that situation or in that... Then the quintiles of schools. You make mention of quintile 1 and then the second bullet quintile 2 and the third bullet quintile 1. I'm also interested as a member of the select committee, what is the situation of the other de Quintas in the schools? Can you just maybe give us the information in that connection? And then, Honorable Chairperson, on the other intervention, the postnatal care within 6 days of delivery. Now, how will you do it? Because my experience is that in some, and maybe 3 or 4 to 5 provinces, the deep rural areas is so vast, and it's difficult to reach those people. Now, what are you going to do to address that situation, to overcome that situation, to go into that deep rural areas? I'm actually thinking of the provinces we visited last year and also this year. That was KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, and the other one was Limpopo. Yeah. I'm very much interested in that situation. And then, Honorable Chairperson, I don't want to take all the questions, but I must put this few. I see here tertiary hospitals. There's nothing mentioned about the tertiary hospital in the Western Cape. You know, when I want to go over there, then my colleagues in the Western Cape will question me. And that is not only the colleagues from the DA, but also the colleagues from the ANC and other departments. They will corner me. And yes, and I must be prepared and capable to answer them. Then the primary health care services, maybe it's in connection with the NHI. There's a steep decrease, 730 million down to 2014-15 to 97 million. Maybe I'm wrong or maybe I'm right. You must just explain that to me so that I can understand it better. Then, Honorable Chairperson, on the budget, this one I will leave, but on the budget, what is the need for revitalization? I take up here 4.1 billion and 4.2 billion and 4.6 billion, but what is the need in connection with the upgrading of hospitals and clinics and so on? So that I can just put it against that situation, what we actually have to spend on that. And then my last question, Honorable Chairperson, and I will look forward to a second round if I can get, or if we can get that second round, the allocation for nursing colleges. It is very appreciative to see that the health department allocate money for the building and the upgrading for nursing. But do you have also some information of the how many nursing colleges we must actually in the health department try to build or revamp and so on, so that we can address the shortages just of nurses? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just have some, I don't know whether I say worries or concerns to raise. It's about the mobile clinics in a farm area and deep rural area. Can't the maybe national department speak to district to expedite functions of these clinics, because they are always not there. At some extreme, people are giving birth to cars that are trying to take them to hospital, and this is not correct. So it's only my worry about it. And then the second point is on your formalizing training of community health workers. I just want to know at what NQF level will that be. And then the other question still goes to the service teams that you put up there. In that other slides now, municipal-based primary health care agents. I just want to find out that there are several teams that I know that are ward-based. The CDW, home-based care, some they call themselves DOTS or Masupatsela. But what I want to find out, because these structures I mentioned here are missing in action. So how do you intend to realign their core functions? Because for sure, like I said, they are really missing in action to make sure that these ward-based primary health care agents are able to work close to them to revitalize them or re-energize them to make sure that they live up to their function as well, because there are a lot of them. Or maybe to inter or realign both the function of the ward-based primary health care agents and that of the CDW, home-based care and all those stuff, so that there should not be a conflict in terms of knocking in everybody's door doing their functions.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you protect me from Prince Zulu here. Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I just want to comment on the issue of banning of alcohol advertising. Deputy Minister, I know it's a rocky, it's going to be a rocky, but we are going to get there. Thank you, Chairperson. I was saying that I know this is going to be a very rocky road, but we'll get there, because one will take the experience that we had around the issue of smoking. But today it's normal for us. When you go to other countries, you find it very strange because we have adapted and we are complying around that issue. I think everybody will comply, and we are very positive that we are going to win this. On the issue of maintenance plan, I must indicate that personally I feel this is a right thing, because the challenge that we are having is that we don't have budget around this. Maintenance, we have facilities, but there are no budgets. But what I didn't pick up is whether do we have a budget for the for maintenance. Chairperson, as you are aware that we are from provinces, and DG, you'll know that every time I'll say, do we get the value for the money? I'm from the Northwest. I'm having a report here. I'm just going to give an example of two hospitals. That is your Freiburg Hospital, which was budgeted 16.6 million for the year 2011-12. And on its completion, the report indicates that 1.2 million was spent. So does it say this is the issue of over-budgeting? And if it is the issue of over-budgeting, how do we ensure that provinces budget correctly? Because if you over-budget, it also leads to the issue of corruption. I'm more interested actually what happened to that the remaining of that plus minus 15 million. And also because my concern is, when you look at the budget of the department, the large amounts goes to the provinces, and it makes one to be worried. You take the issue of Moses Kotane Hospital, which it was budgeted for 49.8 million. And the project, you know, what was projected later after that budget was that they are going to spend 29.9 million.
then we are having a surplus of 20 million. What does that say to us? How do we monitor the project? How do we ensure that at the end we don't have issues of people just over budgeting and we don't get, you know, the value for money? Because this is a reality. This is the report that one is facing. Chairperson, I don't like maybe to leave this issue of support services. That one is more interested. I want to talk specifically to the issue of the Western Cape. That when you talk about the support to the services, support services to the provinces, and one province would say that it doesn't need that support. Do you, as the department, do your own audit, or do you rely on the reports that you get from the provinces that they've got skills? Because Western Cape is not only about Western Cape Town, where it is more urbanized. We've got rural areas that one would be interested. Are you doing your own audit of skills to ensure that even if they say that really you are convinced that they don't need those additional services? Lastly, DG, I must maybe thank the DG for the department for the issue that I raised here, where we had a child who, after her birth, giving birth, she was paralyzed, blind. We have received a report. The family has received a report, which the hospital take responsibility. But what I want to know, who bears the cost? If the family has to go the route of suing the health department, who takes the, who bears the cost? I think that's all. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must say that the ideas and the plans that the Department of Health is putting to us today, they are very good. My only worry is implementation at the lower levels, especially in the rural areas. I'm just looking, for instance, at this one of schools where they want to assist. Having an experience of our rural areas in terms of health, having seen how ill-equipped our clinics in the areas are, I'm just wondering whether we'll be able to reach those very, you know, when they say quintile one schools, immediately what comes to your mind is those areas that, you know, don't have this infrastructure. As to how are we going to be able to do that? But I know it's not something that you can actually outline today to us, this is how we are going to do it. But I'm just worried, because this leads me to my next question, to say those municipalities down there, those local municipalities, are they somehow involved in your planning? In that, when you plan something for those areas, do you involve the locals? Because we expect from the locals, one honorable member here talked about the home base and the CDW. In my constituency now, I am struggling to get the CDWs to work with me so that we can assist them, because they will tell you they are not reporting to you. They've got somewhere where they report at higher structures. And what we need is just to work together. So that's why I'm asking as to whether do you have those relationships with the local municipalities that are going to make sure that these plans are taken up. Really, the plans are good. The personnel itself, if we are going to have enough personnel to do that job. Because if, especially when you talk of schools, I think there is a relationship between education and health in coming up with these plans. But that is at a higher level. What happens down there? Who is going to make sure that these things happen with the health system, I mean, districts and all that, but down to the locals themselves. The other thing that I want to just bring in, so how much you make sure that money is available for medicines and all. There is this problem that I don't know whether it's arranged, that you find that there is no medication in the clinics, as I said, and when you want, the reason is that the person who's given the tender to transport that medication, cars or transport is not in good order. How can, is it not possible maybe for the Department of Health to outsource this facility or this service? Because it's not that medication is not there. I come from Pumala. They have to transport from Nelspruit to my area in the former Kwandebele, which is very far. You go to a clinic, we are still waiting for medication. It has not reached us. So I think this tendering process is also doing us a disservice in a way. Because I don't know who appoints those tender people, but you find that they don't have the capacity to do the job. I don't know how it can work around that. The last one, I just want to hint on this of improving and having nursing colleges operating. I think, having said that, I come from Mpumalanga, you know what happened with Elijah Mango College, or Nursing College. I believe that health is very important, but being shown the facilities where these health workers were trained, it doesn't say we care about health, starting just from the infrastructure and all. So what is it? Is it unpreparedness to start the work, or is just that somebody somewhere doesn't do the work right? You know, you cannot just say we start here and the facility themselves, they don't even reflect the ambition that we have. I think most of the things have been said, and really, maybe the other thing, the last thing that I had here is the report on the district surveys that you do. If we can access that, if we can access the breakdown of saying maybe in Mpumalanga, in this district, you have got so many hospitals, and this is... you talked about it, that you do have that survey. No, it doesn't have to be now. You can send it through to the secretary, so that we are able to in our assisting the department to work in our different constituencies, we are able to refer to that. And even the community health workers, maybe we should know how they are placed after they have graduated. Like, how many do we have where, so that we are assisted and say there is a shortage, real shortage in this area. Obviously, where I come from, there's shortage of nurses, there's shortage of doctors and everything. That can be achieved in a day, but whatever you have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. When DJ was reporting about the smart card, saying it means when you go out for study tours, you come back and see how do you adapt it. We went to Netherlands, and we during the engagement, they told us about the smart card, how it works, and we are now implementing it in the school. On the school health service, on Sunday, I was in one meeting on the National Insurance Health Scheme, and there were health workers there in that meeting, and talking about the going to schools or going to homes. It was long stopped because one of the era was that there was no security. So I think we need to build in the question of security, or the community taking ownership in terms of this is the this is what is going to be helping our children, and not mark the nurses who are deployed. They told me, I'm not afraid. And then lastly, on the long queues, they also talk about the long queues. I was at Home Affairs here, just here, checking for an ID. As you enter, the people will just, they give you the number. So whether you are going to apply for an ID, for a visa, whatever it is, there's a window to say this one is dealing with this. So it's just 1, 2, 3. So I think we're still failing on the long queues. And the attitudes, also in that meeting, they talked about the bad attitudes that our health workers are still displaying. Thank you.
Can I ask the DG and the team to respond, and then I'll then summarize, other than talking now and later. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members, and thank you, Deputy Minister. If you allow us, we can share some of the audit findings. Now, it's a web-based information. It's a lot of data. So what we do, just to safeguard information, you have to be specifically accredited to access the data. So what we'll do, because then we're waiting for the finalization of the audit, and then once that, we'll convert that into a report, and then we can then get the report. But if you want to access the information sooner, we are very strict about the data, because we don't want it to be misused. And we don't want it, because if the media gets it, they can use it anyhow. So we're very cautious about that. That is the first point. But the second is that... Pardon? Yes. So thank you for the questions. Let me start by saying the first question on emergency, with regard to emergency medical services and the budget. Honorable Chair, you know, there's been a controversy about the emergency services and the approach that was followed. What has happened is that the Health Professions Council came up with a new standard for emergency medical services personnel, the paramedics, in that they were raising the level, and the minister expressed that as a concern. I want to start there, because there were a lot of colleges that were producing paramedics, and it has resulted in some of them being unemployed, actually, even with the need that we currently have. So based on that, the minister then established an advisory committee. They're looking at the data at fully of all different categories, meaning an ambulance driver, various levels of paramedics, because what he was arguing is that is what we've done with nursing. We take nurses and we say they must all have degrees. You end up with professional nurses. If you look at the breakdown of enrolled nurses versus professionals, we have more professional nurses than we have enrolled nurses, because we've gone the academic route of nurse training, and it has created problems, because everybody is now a commander, and there are few troops. And I think we're trying to avoid that with paramedics, to say every paramedic must now have a degree when they could do well with their certificates, including ambulance drivers. So the committee was established. They've met twice. I would like us to come back and give you a report of the emergency services. That is the first thing. The second one is that we're currently doing a sort of a data analysis of all emergency services provided in each province. Remember, there's a proposal at the moment that we should have obstetric ambulances. Now, we don't want now to end up having just obstetric ambulances, and now we run short of normal ambulances. So there's a person who is doing a cost analysis at the moment, and will come back to you with the proper costing. So the current budget that we have nationally, because we don't buy ambulances and so on, we've just allocated budget for people who are going to do technical work at a national level. The third area of work is, during the World Cup, we bought ambulances, actually. And then they've been donated to some of the provinces. So we have to look at the total number. Now, some provinces have been very bold. They've already converted their ambulances into obstetrics. So we're saying, as you convert them, make sure that you also have enough for other services. So I thought I should respond in that way. The target for male and female, honorable members, as you notice, we did not give you the target set because we took into account your comments the last time we presented. Remember, our target was 1 billion male condoms and only 6 million female condoms. And we took into account your concerns, and we went back to look at how much are we actually spending on condoms, and how many of these are we procuring? In total, our usage patterns on condoms is about 465 million to about 500, more or less. And for two successive years, we've been at least consuming about that much. But we're mindful of the fact that, honorable member, if I recall, how condoms are used to tie, yes, and we're worried about that level of misuse and abuse. And it was a very fierce discussion during our recent National Health Council. The minister has expressed a concern that we have not strategically thought through a distribution strategy. For instance, one example, he says there's a hype of activity in hotels, but this is not where you see condoms. And the idea was that we should actually go back to the hotel industry to say, can we have condoms in hotels, for instance? Can we have, because in other countries, you do have condoms in the hotel. So meaning we buy them and we say people will come and get them from our facility. So it must be carefully thought out strategy. We should do that regarding both female and male. Meaning we decided not to just put targets but to come up with a distribution strategy. And this is what we're busy with at the moment. But we've heard you. I wanted to say that we listen, we take notes, and we go back and we investigate and take your concerns into account. The third is about the infrastructure and the value of the grants. The point that is raised is why, if I were to look at the grants and the burden of disease, the difference between the different provinces, when we allocate, particularly the grants, the higher education grant, as well as the national training services grant. Now, there are provinces that have medical schools, for instance. Gauteng, KZN, Western Cape, Free State has a University of Free State, and so on. Now, they train doctors. So when we allocate, we take into account that these are the institutions that provide training. So when you allocate higher education grant, it's on the basis of that. So you can't then give Northern Cape more or Mpumalanga because they don't have medical schools, because your professors are in these provinces, KZN, Gauteng, Free State, Western Cape. In future, when we have a medical school in Mpumalanga, obviously, we will then have an increased allocation. I thought I needed to mention that. Thank you very much, Honorable Member, for raising the point about school associations. I think it's one very important group that we did not know about. And I must confess, we focus on the principals, teachers, labor organizations, and governing bodies. As because the minister has already done three provinces, What we'll do for the rest of the other provinces, we'll include the associations in the list. And I must comment that the minister, the outcome and the response has been incredible. I mean, about 600 people meeting. But I think this is very helpful. For the Section 100, I actually agree, honourable members. We need to avoid and prevent a disaster from happening. And the lessons we are learning, for instance, the lessons we are learning in the provinces, I must actually apologize. I should also have mentioned that when I introduced Ms. Reni, that she's actually appointed administrator for health in Limpopo for Section 100. And we've learned quite a lot of lessons. What we are saying, particularly in Limpopo, is that when you come with an intervention, and you show that you can reduce the cost, of course it has a rippling effect. But what we do, if we say we've succeeded, it must be because we've put systems in place that are sustainable, such that when we withdraw, things do not revert back to where they were. So at the moment, and part of the reason we went out to recruit unemployed graduates, because one is that it's a problem for this country, that the country trains our young, they become graduates and they sit at home. And if you look at the background of the people we've recruited, it's touching, actually, because they come from very, very humble families. Some of them, I mean, you can see that their parents went out of their way to educate them, and they're sitting at home being dependent after all those efforts. So for this group that we've just started with on the 1st of May, it's a group of 400. Like, of this group, we say we'll deploy 60 per province. 60. 20 of them will do finance. They must help us sort out our finances, because we can't be a department that is in the news forever that we have negative audit outcomes. It can't be. The second group, honorable members, you remember when we came, you invited us recently to come and tell you about the vacancies that are high and the aging. The other 20 is going to do personal cleanup. Now, what is good, and what I was saying to about the data that we'll show you, that is web-based. What is good about the audit is that we've also physically counted people in every facility where we're doing audits. Of course, the data will change over a period because people resign and retire. But what we want to do is for them to take that audit data and also make sure that what is in the person is a true reflection of the people, warm bodies that are employed. And then we'll come back and say this is the actual report. That is the second one. But we've also picked up in Limpopo during this Section 100 exercise, as well as Gauteng. The problem that is happening is that in our facilities, when invoices are sent to facilities, nobody processes them. They're in boxes. And the result of that is that the accounts are not paid. Because in the provincial office, they only process what they see and what they have. But what is lying in the facilities is not processed. So the people that we are appointing, we are going to deploy to go to every single facility, process every single document that is lying there, so that we can have a sense of what is owed, what is the budget, and come up with an aggressive plan for the accruals. Because at the moment, we just rely on the province to tell us on what the accruals are. Now, we're going to go there and put people there to help the provinces to sort out the problems. And the same will be for information. When you want information about a particular hospital at any point in time, you must be able to get it. So we'll put the information people there to collect reliable information. So that what we've seen with the program that government has, particularly for interns, is that Interns come, they work for 6 months, even in the private sector, and then they're out again. They join the unemployment sector. So what we are saying is that this group, we train them, and then they work, we absorb them. So that is will be a team, and we've made it very clear to provinces that these are the people who are going to be attached to the office of the HOD, so that the HOD makes sure that the province delivers. It cannot be, we can't just be casual about it. It's going to be a little bit forceful because we are committing them to doing certain things. I thought I should mention that to prevent that, because as we've seen with the experience in Limpopo and Gauteng, that we need to come up with preventative measures for other provinces. With regard to invitation to the summit, the DM will probably refer to that, but I wanted to say that for KAMA, the recent KAMA, we had all the members of the, not all, but at least most of the members of the portfolio committee. And I must apologize that we should have also sent an invitation to you. And we'll do that in future. And we apologize for that. The birth rate, I think there's sort of a problem with our family planning services, like I said, not just for the youth, but in general. We no longer guide even families how to do family planning. And even though the recent data from MRC shows that, and State South Africa, that our fertility rates are dropping, but we still have in South Africa big families, despite the data. So on average, you'll see that our fertility rates are dropping, but there are still families that have a big family. And I think we need to have a plan to guide and advise. Doctors not being paid is a big problem. We are in communication with the province, but I've got maybe, could I say, good news for the members of the committee? Good news, because at the last National Health Council, the minister, deputy minister, and the MECs agreed that we're going to have a list of what the minister called non-negotiables, meaning it's a list of those things that it doesn't matter what the province wants to do with its money, those things must be budgeted for and paid for. And on that list, it includes doctors. So we have asked the provinces to tell us what their allocations are for each of those areas that we've identified as non-negotiables. And some provinces have under-allocated, I must say. So we're going back again to say, you allocate, look for money, make sure that these areas, they've been identified as priorities. In addition to that, the minister is also in consultation with the Minister of Finance. I guess there are two issues we need to address. One is that we have to improve the financial management of the health sector, nationally, in provinces, in our facilities. But we also have to go back to Treasury and get Treasury to allocate where there has been under-allocation, meaning we need to deal with both. And I think this is where we are. But we'll share the list of non-negotiables with you. Now, the list of non-negotiables is going to be a very powerful tool for oversight, because you'll also be able to say, when you go to a province, to say, but show us how you've allocated for these services. How come there are no medicines? How come there are no gloves? How come there are no sutures? Show us how you've allocated. And this is going to be a powerful tool. With regard to the attitude, long queues, remember the minister came up with the core standards. Mm-hmm. And of the core standards, it includes attitude of health workers in general, including nurses. It includes the long queues and so on. Now, in some of the provinces, and or maybe let me say in some of the districts, not provinces, there's been a slight improvement with regard to long queues. They've introduced what we call queue marshals. In others, they've not introduced that. In some provinces with regard to attitude, the attitude one is a problem in general. I think we need to do something else. It's about ethos of caring, and we need to inculcate that back to the service for all health workers, because it could be that you have nurses that are rude, but you also have porters who refuse to push stretchers. So we have to deal with this comprehensively. And what we have here and the data that we have is quite fascinating, because you can see for each facility, what in each area the situation is with the attitude, what the situation is with regard to the long queues and so on. But there are two points I wanted to raise, which you did not necessarily raise. When we looked at the data after they conducted the audit, what stands out in all these facilities is that our facilities are dirty, mm-hmm. and two, the second one is the security. But we went back to look at, but who provides these services? Who provides cleaning services? Some are outsourced. And we said, okay, for those that are outsourced, let's see what the results are. Equally for security, it was exactly the same. So when we present the data, we will also share those insights with yourself. The clinical engineers, we actually trained 46 of them. And at the time, when we asked provinces to absorb them after they were trained, and I must be honest and frank, it's KZN that came out and said, we'll take all of them. The other provinces were a bit reluctant, and we said, look, if you can't, we will pay for them. We will pay for them to be deployed. This is why our strategy now is that we try and recruit people and then deploy so that work can happen. Because some provinces, because of the financial constraints, have not been able to employ some of the clinical engineers. But KZN and Gauteng have done very well. So we will go back and train. In this new space, weekend paper, we've advertised for engineers again. But this time again, interns, we train them, and then we deploy them and absorb them. So I think that's the idea. Hospitals that are not performing, Honorable Member, in the Western Cape, we have the data here. We can share it with you. The beauty is that the data is broken down per district. So in a district, you have a group of well-performing facilities and those that are not performing so well. So if you do your constituency work, it's the kind of information that you must have at hand, because you can ask specific questions. This is why I say we'll have to get our officials to train you to use the system. The breakdown per province of the male circumcisions and the ECT uptake. We want to follow the similar process that we had. There are some provinces that, and I want to use KZN as an example. KZN has linked the program of male circumcision with a promotion of male behavior to promote certain social values as part of the campaign against violence against women, you know, to teach people about manhood, about not to treat women badly. And I think it's a noble thing. You know, to say that maybe we must link programs to other social values that we want to promote. Now, it's only KZN that has a program like that is linked to medical male circumcision, but other provinces have not organized. Eastern Cape has been doing it anyway, but we are saying that for KZN, they've specifically organized it in this manner.
obstacles to increasing vitamin supplementation is actually linked to obstacles that we identified when we do immunization. So when children go for immunization, we also give vitamin A supplementation as an aim to deal with blindness and other things. So what we are saying is that we want to go lower to pick up these problems when children are in crèches and kindergarten, so that those who have missed out, we can also catch them, at least for early child, as part of early childhood development. For quintile 1 and 2, let me just mention that, I just mentioned quintile 1 and 2. We're going to do work in all the quintiles.
Yeah.
And we have a program, and it's just that I was being brief about our presentation. It's a very comprehensive program. And we'll share with you what will happen in each quintile, and we staggered this over a number of years. For postnatal care and 6 days of delivery. Honorable members, when we show you the data that comes out of the audit, what we did, we said to colleagues at National that we have to change the way we work. Now, all the SMS members have to be part of the what we call facility improvement team. Now, what they do, it means they must go and spend time in those districts where there are hardships and problems. So each one of them has a plan, and we actually have a plan for each one. If we have time, we can share the plans with you. And the group that went to Zululand, for instance, last week, they came back very depressed. I said, but you see, this is the point. The difference now is that we don't have a plan, we present and we sit and hope things will happen. We'll be out there in the facilities. So we have a team at National, and we have a provincial team. And then we have a district team. So it's one team. They jointly come up with a plan, we allocate resources, and they work. So for each of those plans, we'll bring them to you. When you do constituency work, we'll follow up for each of the districts. So we've done this in five. We're left with three. And about a province, honorable member, that says they don't need support. We do that because we ask upfront what type of support do we need. And then we make a list so that when we go to a province, we know that we've got proper skills and enough hands to help. And Western Cape gave us a sense that they've got adequate number of people and skills, and this is why we thought, instead of giving them the funds, let's redirect them elsewhere, maybe where they're needed most. And that was from that perspective. We thought perhaps there are more provinces that have more need than them. But we will probably have to think about how we respond. For Western Cape Tertiary, they are included in the list. We've audited all the facilities. We didn't leave out anything. Even within Western Cape, there are non-performing districts. There are underperforming facilities. We've got that data. And our focus is to go to those that are not performing, to go and lift them up, and then to help these to at least improve their performance to be much higher. So we'll tackle both. We're not going to ignore these and say they're doing well, because it's not like they're doing very well, but these are worse off, and we want to start with those so that we can improve services. For primary health care allocation, honorable member, our view is that we can't keep a lot of money at National for primary health care. And we also believe that the money for primary health care should also not be kept in the province. It should be in the district. But before we allocate those monies to the district, we must first build capacity of the district office to manage finances. We must also build the institutional arrangements. You know that when we did an assessment of the governing bodies, for instance, your hospital boards, your clinic committees, it's not every facility that has a clinic committee. if they do have, they don't meet regularly, and so we did an audit of that also. So we need to train our hospital boards, ensure that they are functional, but the district must have capacity to manage all of that, and we want the allocation to go in that direction. The audit outcomes, like I said, honourable members will share the data with you. It's web based at the moment, so it means we'll have to expose you to some training. It won't take long, and then show you how to use the data, analyze it, and play around with it. Allocation for nursing colleges. Actually, for nursing colleges, there are 122 colleges that need to be fixed. We've already started work in 49 of them. So meaning we started last year, we're continuing. By the end of this financial year, we should have finished work in 50 of them. But our aim is to target 122 colleges. The concerns about mobile clinics in the farms. I indicated, honourable members, that KZN has already bought 16. We are buying 30. Now, it's not common that National Health would buy mobile clinics, but we are going to buy 30 and deploy them exactly where they should be. Now, the minister has been very specific about these mobiles. He says, don't just buy the usual ones, the small one that does not provide comprehensive services. They must be comprehensive enough to be able to bring services closer to people. So we've already started. Hopefully, they'll be ready in June for them to be provided. Now, the problem now that we've picked up when we planned for the purchase of the 30, we realized that normally when we plan for mobiles, we don't plan for maintenance of the mobiles and the transport costs. So we just buy a mobile and that's it. It's enough. So this time around, we're planning comprehensively for the services. And we're going to be doing the same also for the emergency, the ambulances and so on. A plan for maintenance and support. The trainees, the community health workers, honorable member, we did an audit, a total of 78,000 of these workers. They are called, like our honorable members indicated, they are called Masupatsila and so on, dot supporters. Now, 78,000. Now, at the moment, labor is pushing that we must employ all of them. It's not possible. It is not possible. So what we said is that we need an integrated service. You can't have a different types of community health workers doing different things. For instance, one will go and provide dot support to a family, and then whilst they're still busy, another one comes and says, we came for HIV counseling, and then another one. So it means they overburden a family. So what we're saying is that let's just have one who is doing all of that work. But remember, you still need your home-based care. Home-based care is not just about HIV. Home-based care is also for people with cancer or other terminal diseases, okay? So you still need your home-based care. You still need to train them. But we're saying let's integrate the services. So we've just started with the 5,000. And we're working with the CTAS so that Department of Social, the Department of Social Development, because they've come up with a standard of what a community-based health worker must be, the level at which they should be remunerated and so on. Because even with this group, some are paid, others are not, some are volunteers, you know, it's not uniform and standardized. Then we try to correct that. Alcohol advertising, yes, indeed, it's going to be a difficult one. A maintenance plan, can I just say for the cost, there's actually a breakdown of cost. For the backlog maintenance, we looked at the overall, what we call the overall estate of government in the public, in the health sector. The estate of government in the health sector is about 300 billion. About 325 billion is the total estate, meaning all the buildings, everything. It's just over 300 billion. And of the 300 billion, we are saying that you must always budget between 20% and 30% to ensure that you don't have a backlog in terms of maintenance. But for routine preventative maintenance, you must budget 3% to 5%. So what we are saying, with these grants, there must be a certain percentage that goes to maintenance. We know that historically, provinces have been using equitable share to allocate for maintenance. We say, no, that's not enough. We can't rely on that. They must, when we say this is a grant, take at least a small percentage of that and allocate for maintenance. And this is how we will do it. For Northwest, Honorable Member, I like the Northwest example because this is one province. If you read the Northwest reports over the years, you'll see that they've been showing that they are spending their money very well. Their implementation rates, when it comes to allocation of grants, they were doing well. But we went back. We said, but we want to understand why Northwest is doing well. They actually they inflate prices. Northwest. Inflate. Yes, meaning if you have to build a school for 5 million, they'll write 50 million. That is the problem with Northwest. So at the moment, we are working with the HOD. There's a forensic underway in Northwest. Okay? So Northwest is a nice example. So what we've done to prevent the Northwest of this world, Honorable Member, we set up what we call the Program Management Support Unit in each province. These are units that will have engineers who will then monitor and check on a regular basis. But we also have a steering committee that I chair because it's not enough to leave it to those committees. I'm chairing the committee now to make sure that we can follow up. So for support services, Western Cape, yes, we will try our best to work with Western Cape. It's also part of it's a province in South Africa. We'll work together. The cost of litigation, there's a draft bill that is underway at the moment, which is meant to deal with the litigation. Because we've seen government is, our estimate, what we did, Honorable Members, we've gone to 5 provinces where there's litigation to look at what those cases are and so on. Remember, there are 2 problems. The one problem is that because of the road accident fund, we've seen a lot of vexatious litigation. And also, when you look at the cost and the what we call the quantum of what the lawyers want. Actually, it's money that goes to the lawyers, not the victims. So we are coming up with a plan. There's a body in the UK. It's called the National Health Service Litigation Authority. What you do with a system like that, you actually make sure that those that have been harmed actually are properly compensated. But you create a mechanism for that. And then you make sure that the money doesn't go to lawyers, but to those that have been harmed. But you can't establish a process like that without setting up a quality system. So in the UK, they've got a body like the Office of Health Standard Compliance. They call it Quality Care Commission. But it works in partnership with this litigation authority. So you need both. So we've realized that we need both systems and that the legal team is working on that. The plans at lower level in rural areas, I've already said... yes, we've got the implementation teams that have been sent to provinces. For education, we've got basic... There's a joint plan with basic education and teams that are working together. So for tenders, the minister has said it over and over again, that tenders are killing the system. And we've started a process of doing a central procurement, and we'll use that as a basis of addressing the problems that the Honorable Members have said. The
The rest of the other questions I've already responded to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, members. I think the DG has really responded to all the issues that have been raised. I just wanted to alert members also that we are in the middle of a decade, a UN decade for road safety to reduce casualties, and we're working with the Department of Transport in that regard. So the issues of prevention, and that's why we don't look only around the availability of ambulances when we look at emergency medical services. We've also, which program started during the World Cup, started training of communities along the high-risk areas for road accidents. So I think that when we come back, we'll give it a, we'll provide you with a more comprehensive approach to that. And although maybe we don't really profile our work, but for all these high-risk areas for accidents, we work closely, we increase the number of ambulances, the casualties and all that. So it's quite an involved area there, working with provinces. I thought, Mube, the issue of school health governing bodies. The other one is not white anymore. Eh? It's it's sort of privileged. It's from privilege. It's from the privileged schools. Okay. I just thought that if there was still a problem, then we must work together to deal with it. The issue of Gauteng budget. Gauteng has a complaint, which we try and dismiss, that they are underfunded for the fact that they are the biggest population, that they've got a high informal settlement populations there that are under service, and that they're easily accessible. Unlike the Western Cape, there's no access from all provinces that are surrounding, including Eastern Cape and KZN. There are taxis that go up and down every regularly. So what we would recommend, members, is that you maybe help us to interface with the Finance and Fiscal Commission to look at these issues, to look at the criteria for allocating budget, because that's where the equitable share comes in. And in most cases, it is not necessarily within our control, but it is the Finance Committee, Treasury, and all that. So I think it's an area that we should work around so that indeed we have an equitable share, equitable distribution, including according to the burden of disease as well. So that formula the DG and the team are looking at, and I think your input will also be appreciated as well. But the intention is also to redress the imbalances of the past, because if we don't, there is no urban center that can survive without the rural areas being developed. Because people are going to I don't want to raise the issue of refugees again, but we will be tempted to use it because we don't understand that previously there are certain provinces that were hugely privileged, and that's a fact of history. And there are areas that Mayor Borotor has been speaking about who as yet are waiting for infrastructure. So the redress commitment is very critical. And we also need to be sensitive that we all share one thing, South African citizenship. And everyone has the right to the services that are available in the country. So that's why we are pressurized to improve where people live. It's just a few things that I thought I should... we do have the issue of benchmarking. We do have the National Service Excellence Award, where we also profile. And we would like every province and every district to have the excellence award to share best practices as well. I think that was from yourself, Mama. And then the issue of, I think the rest the DG has dealt with, the issue of vitamin supplementation is the focus on the overall child health and prevention of malnutrition. So this road to health card, we're also looking at working with partners to look at the effective implementation of the well baby program, so that you weigh the baby, you check when the baby comes for immunization, you also check that as part of the early childhood development program. The issue of
Just also to say that the Western Cape is part of a national program, including the Khayelitsha Hospital that has been built. It was funded from national grants and all that. So it's not that it is neglected. So if there are any concerns, please raise them. We will certainly do that. But whether it's capacity, let us maybe focus on supporting provinces that are struggling. But certainly, even the minister and myself have visited the farming areas where there are high levels also of fetal alcohol syndrome, programs in schools and all that. The issue of Member Plaki, we agree, and that is why the mothers don't access antenatal services until it's too late, that it is an urgent matter. And we've done a lot of district visits in various provinces that have attested to this, and we are prioritizing that issue. In terms of integrating community health workers, KZN is a good practice. I think members should also maybe ask KZN Health Department or even the Premier's office to come and present how this program has been integrated. I think that will really assist. The last thing that I really wanted to mention is that the issue of building internal capacity, as the DG said, is one area that we are looking at to beef it up, not only in terms of distribution of medicines, also the clinical engineers program, rebuilding those workshops for repairing the equipment that is damaged and all that. So it is a strategic intervention to look at how we build the capacity within the state itself. I just want to thank members for the interaction, and indeed for those areas that we still need to come and share with you details, we are available to do so.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. I won't allow any second round. The time is against us members. I'm sorry about that. And let me take this opportunity to from the side of the committee to thank the department for the comprehensive presentation you have made on your plans and also your budget for the following financial year, and also hope that you will push hard with the other relevant departments on the issue of integrated health at the highest level. And also, so those are the few things that I want to raise. But we look forward also on the further submission of other, reports that you have requested from you. And thanks a lot. See you next time.
Can I have honorable members from the ANC remaining just for 5 minutes? And we can be assisted if you can take quickly and go out. Oh.